Hello, everyone, and welcome to Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer, coming to you live from Harlem, USA. I am your host, Batavi Levin Company, relationship coach and divorce mediator, and I'm so glad that you have chosen to join in this celebration of Mother's Day. We have a full show today. We will hear music from Brandon Ross and the singer and comedian Anita Renfro. Brandon Lacey Campos will share poetry written for his aunt, whom he calls Honeybun. Dr. George Bennett will give us insight into how the mother was deified in ancient Egypt, and I hope to hear from you. Call in, tell everyone how much you love your mother and why. You are listening to Grammy-nominated jazz pianist DJ Ayer. The piece is called Galang, Trio Riot version from his album Historicity. Sit back, take a listen while everyone gathers, and I'll be back in just a moment. Join us today. This is The Problem is the Answer, and it's the Untangled Resolutions broadcast of The Problem is the Answer, and we're here today to celebrate Mother's Day, and I'm so glad that you've chosen to celebrate Mother's Day with us. I remember celebrating Mother's Day back in the day at our own house, and I wonder whether your Mother's Day was something like ours. We'd wake up early in the morning. We thought we would wake up before Mom did. I don't know if we ever really succeeded, but we'd head down to the kitchen, my brother and my sister and I, and we'd make breakfast for her and put it on a tray, and somebody would go to the backyard and cut a flower and put it in a bud vase, and then we'd tiptoe up the stairs, and if we had Mother's Day cards, we'd put the cards on the tray too and tiptoe up the stairs and come into her room and say Happy Mother's Day to her, and she seemed to appreciate it so much, even if the toast was cold and the orange juice had spilled on the tray. I think it was the effort that counted for her. So we're going to talk a little bit more about how we celebrate Mother's Day and celebrating our mothers on this show. If you're listening on the internet, please join in the chat room to share your stories about the women who have nurtured you there. And I'll be going back and forth between the switchboard here and the chat room to see what's going on over there as well, and perhaps sharing some stories here on the air. I'm going to start the show today with a little bit of background about how Mother's Day came to be celebrated in the United States. Actually, we're going to talk a little bit later in the show about the very, very early origins of honoring women and honoring women who are mothers. But here in the United States, most people know about the story of Anna Jarvis, whose efforts to honor her mother are largely understood to be responsible for our current celebration of Mother's Day. But when I was researching the show, I discovered another story. Julia Ward Howe is actually the first person to propose celebrating Mother's Day in North America. And her name should sound familiar to you. She is the person who wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. So this is the author of that very famous song. But the first North American Mother's Day was conceptualized by Julia Ward Howe with her Mother's Day Proclamation in 1870. And I'm gathering this information from a website that you might be interested in. It's called www.mothersdaycentral.com. And if you put /about-mothersday/history, you'll get very interesting information that I've used in putting together this show, and you might want to pop over there and get a more expanded version of the information that's available there. But according to the website, the first North American Mother's Day was conceptualized with Julia Ward Howe's Mother's Day Proclamation in 1870. And they say, despite having penned the Battle Hymn of the Republic 12 years earlier, Howe had become so distraught by the death and carnage of the Civil War that she called on mothers to come together and protest what she saw as the futility of their sons killing the sons of other mothers. And with the following, she called for an International Mother's Day celebrating peace and motherhood. And I'm going to read a few stanzas from the poem that she wrote, calling mothers together for peace. The poem says, "Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts. Whether your baptism be that of fire or of tears, say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by relevant agencies. Our husbands did not come to us reeking of carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure others. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of council. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. And the poem goes on from there. It's a really powerful poem. If you want to read more of the poem and more of this information, again, you can go to www.mothersdaycentral.com/about-mothersday/history. I'm really glad to have this opportunity on the show as well to talk about my own mom, who has been so very supportive of me throughout my years, and she's also very, very supportive of this show. She is my biggest cheerleader, and I've said this before. I'm amazed by how much she's able to accomplish on my behalf and on the behalf of my brother and sister and I and our family in general. I'm going to start talking about my mom by reading a tribute that my brother has sent to me that he asked me to read about my mom. That's how I'm going to introduce my mom to you. So my brother says, my mom is extra special even among mothers. When I was only a year and a half, my mom migrated with me and my two toddler-age sisters from South Africa to California using 5 different planes to get there. You can imagine what that journey must have been like with all the luggage and 3 little kids, moving your entire life to a new country while worried that the apartheid government may interfere at some point along the way. From that time until now, she has never stopped working and sacrificing to give us the best lives we can have. My mother has been especially there for me during the 2 hardest years of my life, when I was the loneliest and most heartbroken. She never has stopped believing in me, no matter what I struggle with, and I can always count on her unconditional love. As mothers go, my mom really deserves to win a Lifetime Mother Award. No one could have asked for better. I love her more and more each year. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. I love you. In that tribute, my brother alludes to the story of how our family came to the United States. And we urge my mom to write a book about it because really it is the stuff of cloak and daggers and intrigue. We were born, my brother and sister and I, in South Africa during the time of apartheid. And when my parents got an opportunity to come to the United States, they, of course, jumped at it and took it. But leaving South Africa was not as easy as some people might imagine. It was actually really, really difficult. to the point that once my mom applied for a passport, she was summoned, actually, she was taken from her work. She taught in a high school in Soweto in South Africa, and she was taken from her classroom by police officers who took her to John Foster Square and interrogated her about why she wanted to leave South Africa, about what she thought about politics and her political leanings and so forth. And it just so happens that John Foster Square, where she was interrogated, was the same place where Steve Biko was interrogated and killed. So you can imagine what kind of an experience that was for her. But throughout that, she remained strong. And in fact, throughout our lives, my mom has been a beacon of strength, somebody to whom we can always turn, both for guidance and help, and then also for inspiration. So everything that I've been able to accomplish, all the adventures that I've taken on, starting this show, for example, comes because I knew from my mom that if you set your mind to do something, you just dive right in there and do it, and it can be accomplished. She never seemed to be afraid of anything, my mom. So I'm really happy to share that story about my mom. I also have my own tribute for my mom, and, you know, she's listening to the show right now, and I want to remind her, you know, I don't know if she remembers this story, but when I was in high school one year, I missed the bus. I missed the bus for a field trip that was really important. It was for a physics class that I was taking, and going on this field trip was a major part of the class. The field trip was to some kind of installation. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was about 2.5 hours drive into the California desert. And here I was, I'd missed the bus. My mom is a nurse. She's a nurse practitioner now, but she was an RN at the time, and she worked the night shift. So she came home from work that morning to find me rather distraught about having missed the bus to go on this trip. And she didn't hesitate a second. Without my having to ask, she said, "Let's go." And so she came straight off the night shift. We hopped into the car, and she drove me 2.5 hours out into the desert so that I wouldn't miss my field trip. And that is one of the iconic memories that I have of my mother and the wonderful things that she has done for us. So I'm hoping that you are inspired by hearing these stories and that you will also call in and let me know about what it is that you think about your mom and why you love your mom so much, what the wonderful stories are that you have about her. The number to call is 818-532-9789. That's 818-532-9789. And when you get on to the phone call and you'll hear the instructions there, what you'll do is you'll press the number 1 to be put on the air. But again, I remind you that if you don't want to be put on the air, if you're just listening to the show over the phone, then don't press the number 1 because I will come to you and put you on the air. And I have found that sometimes people are caught by surprise. So I don't want any of that to happen to any of you. Please go ahead and call in. And then again, if you want to be put on the air, you're going to press the number 1. All right. So I have a special treat for you today. A few months ago, I happened to hear this song and thought this is perfect for Mother's Day. There is a comedian and singer named Anita Renfro who is known for doing some wonderful takes on popular music and talking about the life of a wife and a mother through the interpretation of popular songs. And so she put together this song that is set to the William Tell Overture. And I'm just going to go ahead and play it and let her introduce the song herself. So I hope you enjoy this, and I will be back with you in just a moment.
So what I have done is I have figured out what a mom would say in a 24-hour period, and I have condensed it to 2 minutes and 55 seconds. So strap on your seatbelt. Here we go.
Thank you. clothes and your shoes. Hear the words I said. Get up now. Get up and make your bed. Are you hot? Are you cold? Are you wearing that? Where's your books and your lunch and your homework at? Grab your coat and your gloves and your scarf and hat. Don't forget, you gotta feed the cat. Eat your breakfast, the expert tell us it's the most important meal of all. Take your vitamins so you will grow up one day to be big and tough. You and your orthodontist will be seeing you at 3 Tuesdays. Don't forget your piano lesson is this afternoon, so you must play. Don't shovel. Choose slowly, but hurry. The bus is here. Be careful. Come back here. Did you wash behind your ears? Play outside. Don't leave a rope. Would you just play fair? Be polite. Make a friend. Don't forget to share. Work it out. Wait your turn. Never take a dare. Get along. So maybe come down there. Clean your room. Fold your clothes. Put your stuff away. Make a bed. Do it now. Do we have all day? Were you born in a barn? Would you like some hay? Can you even hear a word I say? Get off the phone. Don't sit so close. Turn it down. No texting at the table. No more computer time tonight. Your iPod is my iPod if you don't listen up. Where are you going in what room and what time do you think you're coming home? Say thank you, please, excuse me, makes you welcome everywhere you roam. You'll appreciate my wisdom someday when you're older and you're grown. Can't wait till you have a couple little children of your own. You'll thank me for the counsel I gave you so willingly, but right now I'd thank you not to roll your eyes at me. Close your mouth when you chew. We'd appreciate, take a bite, maybe two of the stuff you hate. Use your fork, do not burp, or I'll set you straight. Eat the food I put up on your plate. Get an A, get a door, don't be smart with me. Get a grip, get in here, I'll count to three. Get a job, get a life, get a PhD. Get those, I don't care if you started. You're grounded until you're 36. Get your story straight and tell the truth for once, for heaven's sake. And if all your friends jumped off a cliff, would you jump too? If I've said it once, I've said at least a thousand times before that you only act this way. It must be your father's DNA. Look at me when I am talking, stand up straighter when you walk up the way. For everything and everything must be in play. Stop crying or I'll give you something real to cry about. Wash your teeth, wash your face, get your PJs on, get in bed, get a hug, say a prayer with mom. Don't forget, I love you. And tomorrow we will do this all again, because we're not forever. You don't need the reason why. Because. I said so. I'm the mom. Ta-da!
Isn't it? That describes what I hear from moms all the time. In fact, I remember hearing stuff like that from my own mother. So that was Anita Renfro, and it is a song that she set to the William Tell Overture. And if you want more information about her, you can Google her. If you go to YouTube and Google Anita Renfro, N-A-N-I-T-A, and her last name is spelled R-E-N-F-R-O-E, you can see her YouTube videos where you will see her comedy act live and hear more of her music. And we will be hearing more from her later on in the show. So I want to continue a bit to give you a little bit of background about how Mother's Day came to be celebrated here in the United States. And I told you a little bit about Julia Ward Howe, who was famous for writing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. But then 12 years later, after the experience of the Civil War, sort of seemed to do a little bit of a turn from celebrating the Battle Hymn of the Republic, writing a poem that called for women, mothers in particular, to come together in the spirit of peace, promoting peace. It didn't take, though, Howe's Mother's Day. And so it wasn't until 1908, a number of years later, that Anna M. Jarvis started a campaign for the creation of an official Mother's Day in remembrance of her mother and in honor of peace as well. And Anna M. Jarvis is the person that most of us know is being credited with successfully getting Mother's Day to be honored around the country. And so it says here on the website, www.mothersdaycentral.com, it says that in 1908, Anna petitioned the superintendent of the church where her mother had spent over 20 years teaching Sunday school, and her request was honored to have an official Mother's Day. And then on May 10, in 1908, the first official Mother's Day celebration took place at the Andrews Methodist Church in Grafton, West Virginia, and a church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania as well. So the first celebrations of Mother's Day took place in those areas. And it says that the West Virginia event drew a congregation of 407 people, and that Anna Jarvis arranged for white carnations, her mother's favorite flower, to adorn the patrons. Two carnations were given to every mother in attendance, and today, white carnations are used to honor deceased mothers, white, pink, or red carnations to pay tribute to mothers who are still alive. So did you give your mom carnations today? Pink or red carnations if she happens to be still with us, and white carnations if she happens to have passed away. It turns out that carnations are the official flowers of Mother's Day. Speaking of official flowers, one of the fights then that Anna M. Jarvis got into, I mean, not only did she struggle to petition for the government to recognize Mother's Day, but then she became really appalled by how the holiday, as it grew, became commercialized. I mean, this isn't what she intended at all. And she says, it says here that the holiday flourished in the United States, and flowers, especially white carnations, became very popular. One business journal, the Florist's Review, went so far as to print, "This was a holiday that could be exploited." But the budding commercialization of Mother's Day greatly disturbed Jarvis, so she vociferously opposed what she perceived as a misuse of the holiday. In 1923, she sued to stop a Mother's Day event, and in the 1930s, she was arrested for disturbing the peace at the American War Mothers Group. She was protesting their sale of flowers. In the 1930s, Jarvis also petitioned against the postage stamp featuring her mother, a vase of white carnations, and the word Mother's Day. Jarvis was able to have the words Mother's Day removed, and the flowers remained on the stamp. In 1938, Time magazine ran an article about Jarvis's fight to copyright Mother's Day, but by then it was already too late to change the commercial trend. So she spent quite a bit of time and energy in her life trying to keep Mother's Day non-commercial, to make sure that it remained just a celebration of mothers and it wasn't about money and gifts and so forth. In opposition to the flower industry's exploitation of the holiday, Jarvis wrote, "What will you do to rout charlatans, bandits, pirates, racketeers, kidnappers, and other termites that would undermine with their greed one of the finest, noblest, and truest moments and celebrations?" Despite her efforts, flower sales on Mother's Day continued to grow. And Florist's Review wrote, "Miss Jarvis was completely squelched." So it would seem that although many of us do engage in the tradition of giving flowers to our mothers on Mother's Day, the founder of Mother's Day, or at least the recognized founder of Mother's Day, is sort of rolling in her grave about it. It says here that Anna Jarvis died in 1948, blind, poor, and childless. Jarvis would never know that it was, ironically, the Florist Exchange that had anonymously paid for her care. So there you have a little bit of irony and a bit of background about the person who inspired Mother's Day in the way that we celebrate it today, the person who came after Julia Ward Howe and actually was successful in getting Mother's Day to be recognized as a national holiday. Now, phone lines are open, and I'm really encouraging you to call in and tell us about your mom and why you love your mom so much. The phone number is 818-532-9789, and the phone lines are open. So it's wide open for you to come in and celebrate your mom. I do want to share with you a tribute that was sent by a friend of mine, actually, a long, long time friend from elementary school. I think we were at least 10 years old, or at most 10 years old, actually, when we first met, Mark Hartman. And he sent a tribute as well to his mother. He told me a little bit about his background. And it turns out that his mom was a single mom who battled against tremendous odds herself in order to raise her children. And he writes, "Mom raised my six brothers and sisters and then myself while dealing with the results of surviving polio, with one hand still working without ever complaining. She taught us right from wrong and how to get along in this crazy world. I know my mom won't be able to listen to this message on the air, but I'd like to take the time to thank her and make sure that all moms out there who are following in her footsteps know that they are appreciated. That's a beautiful tribute there from Mark, and I'm so glad that he sent it in. And it's an example of what you can do as well to honor your mom by calling in. So the number is 818-532-9789, and this is your chance to tell the world, really, why you love your mother so much and what she's done for you. In the meanwhile, I'm going to take a moment to tell you another story about my mom and how brave she was. How brave she was in this moment that I'm about to tell you, but I'm thankful to be able to say that my mom is very much alive and kicking. One day I remember coming into the house. I think I'd been outside playing, and I heard my mom yelling. And I ran into the kitchen where she was to see what was going on. Now, let me give you a little bit of background before I get into what it was that I saw when I came into the kitchen and found my mom yelling, which was really, really unusual, because my mom is usually a very even-keeled person. Nothing scares her, at least not in front of us. And so to hear her yelling like this was really an unusual event. But you have to understand, she grew up in South Africa. And in South Africa, we have a lot of really, really deadly snakes. For example, we've got the spitting cobra, which can kill a person very quickly. We've got all kinds of different snakes that are out there. So in South Africa, a snake is not to be tolerated at all. You know, when I grew up here in the United States, things were a little bit different. In Southern California, you do have the rattlesnake, but, you know, they tend to stick to themselves. You don't see them very much. You know, places have gotten really populated and so forth. And I remember enjoying herpetology when I went to camp and learning about snakes and so forth. And my favorite snake was the king snake, the California king snake, which is totally harmless and a really cool looking snake. So I liked snakes. But I discovered on that day that my mother did not like snakes. You know, it happened that we lived across the street from an open field. And during the summertime, the university that was built up around the town that I grew up in would plant alfalfa in the field and harvest it. And in the wintertime, a sheep herder would come up from Mexico and he would winter his sheep there across the field. So it was used for agricultural purposes. But in the time that it wasn't being used, it turned out that it was a place where little critters could make a home, including gophers, and then, of course, the predators of gophers would come as well, and those were snakes. One of these snakes decided to cross the road and have a little bit of an adventure and wound up somehow in our kitchen. And that's why my mom was yelling. I came in and found her literally screaming her head off, and she had a broom in her hand, and she had the snake cornered, and she was beating the poor thing with the brush end of the broom, trying to get it out of the kitchen. Now, of course, I liked snakes, right? So I said to my mom, "Mom, what are you doing?" She says, "Get away, get away. It's a snake." And I looked and I saw the snake. I said, "No, no, it's okay. It's okay. Let me pick it up." And I reached to pick it up. Oh, that was a mistake. Boy, was that a mistake, reaching out to pick up that snake. My poor mother almost had a heart attack. Well, you know, we called a neighbor and she helped my mom to dispose of the poor snake, you know, get it out of the kitchen. But this is one of those instances where I'm sure that my poor mom was, you know, faced with a situation where she was it. She saw this danger that was just overwhelming to her, you know, based on how she had grown up. Snakes are deadly and are, you know, creatures to be terrified of. And yet she went and she dealt with it. She dealt with it passionately. But she went and she dealt with it. So, again, I'm thankful to my mom for her bravery. And there's another story about her regarding that. Well, I am happy to say that a little bit later on in the show, I will be welcoming Dr. George Bennett, or at least I hope to be welcoming Dr. George Bennett to the show. He's going to talk about some of the very earliest celebrations of mothers, and that has to do with celebration of mothers as deities. And I'm going to go back here to that website that I've referenced about mothers and Mother's Day history. And the website is www.mothersdaycentral.com. And to find this particular section on history, you would say put in /about-mothersday/history. So it's www.mothersdaycentral.com, all one word, and then /about-mothersday/history. So you can get this information there. And they talk there about the spiritual origin of Mother's Day. They say that only recently dubbed Mother's Day, the highly traditional practice of honoring motherhood is rooted in antiquity, and past rites typically had strong symbolic and spiritual overtones. Societies tended to celebrate goddesses and symbols rather than actual mothers. The personal human touch to Mother's Day is a relatively new phenomenon. The material objects of adoration ranged from mythological female deities to the Christian church itself. Only in the past few centuries did celebrations of motherhood develop a decidedly human focus. So I'm looking forward to talking with Dr. Bennett in a little bit. But before that, I would like to play for you a piece that was written by Brandon Ross. And he's somebody that we've heard here on the show before, and I hope to be able to play him again later on. But this is a song that he wrote in tribute to his own mother, and the song is called Marigolds for Eleanor. In that song, he memorializes the things that his mom used to do for him. And so I'd like you to sit back and take a listen. This is Brandon Ross's tribute to his own mother. And take this opportunity to think about what it is that you would like to say in tribute to your own mom. I'll be back in just a moment. Marigolds for Eleanor. Called Marigolds for Eleanor, and it basically is a litany of the things that Brandon's mom used to do for him and the memories that he had of her. She has passed away, but I thought that it would be great to share a bit of his tribute to his mom. I am very happy to welcome to the show Dr. George Bennett. He is an archaeologist and an art historian, and he leads tours in Egypt that focus on early Egypt and Egyptian history and culture and so forth. And so I'm going to let him continue with the introduction of himself and what he does, but we're going to talk a bit about mothers in the spiritual sense and how in ancient times mothers were honored. So, Dr. Bennett, you are on the air. Hello, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I want to wish everybody out there Happy Mother's Day. Basically, what the title of your show, Spirituality, Mothers and the Spirituality, that takes me back to the actual role of the goddess. The goddess in ancient Egypt, the goddess in ancient Egypt was represented by the feminine principle. Many of us don't really know or understand that it was the feminine principle based on the goddess that actually was the impetus for the first civilization in the world. It was a matriarchal culture, as opposed to where we live now, which is mainly dominated by male thinking. So when I reflect upon this, I realize that it was the woman's ability to produce the kinds of arts and science taking place thousands of years ago. I want to focus again on the goddess, because a lot of people become confused about the goddess and the role of the goddess. The goddess is represented in many forms in ancient Egypt, or Kemet. Kemet is the name that we actually use for Egypt. We can find, going to the various temples, such as the temple of Dendera, which is the temple of Hathor, a sky goddess, and sometimes represented as a cow goddess. And then we'll look at the goddess Nut, which is also a sky goddess. And we can see in the chapels and at Edfu, which is one of the temples that we visit when we go to Egypt, there's a chapel for the goddess Nut, and we can see that this illustration of the goddess Nut giving birth to the sun. Now, we all know that if we had no sun, there would be no air, there would be no water, there would be no vegetation, there would be no people. So we have to look at her as being first. Now, many people, when they look at the various goddesses, you know, you have goddess, you have the goddess Setet, you have the goddess, which is an antelope goddess, you have the goddess Sekhmet, which is the feline or lion-headed goddess, and they all have different roles. So that when the Europeans came to Egypt and discovered in the temples and in the tombs these what they call a pantheon of goddesses and gods, right away they said, well, you know, these people, they worship a lot of different gods and goddesses. Well, the fact of the matter is that each entity or each god or goddess is the representation of the one.
What does that mean?
Let me explain.
Okay.
Let me explain that. Every goddess in ancient Kemet was a particular aspect of one goddess. So in other words, if we saw the goddess Nut, we know that the goddess Nut can transform herself into the goddess Hathor. She can also transfer herself into the goddess Sekhmet or the goddess Setet. So and on and on and on and on. These are different aspects, and each one of these goddesses have a particular, if you will, task. And so that the way it was illustrated on the walls, in the temples, and in the tombs, you would see three or four or five deities or goddesses, and you would think to yourself, well, these are individual goddesses. But in fact, they were just one. And the reason why I picked Hathor as being the main goddess is because she is the one that created the masculine, the masculine attribute through her. And I was on Facebook, and it was a sister, you know, she put something up there about, you know, who am I? And when I explained that she was the goddess and that her spirituality is really part of the universe, and that she is connected totally to the universe, and that she was first, And, well, she wrote back and she said, well, you know, I believe in the goddess within, and but I also believe that the God within it also exists. And I said, yes, well, they do come in dual pairs. But we must remember that when a woman is pregnant in the fallopian tube, before that baby becomes to full ripeness and it's ready to be released into the world, mm-hmm. the child will go through changes such as becoming a female before it actually becomes a male.
But can you explain that a little bit?
Okay.
Because actually, I wanted to ask you. I was puzzled when you said that. I think you said it was Hathor who gave birth to the masculine.
Yes.
So I had a question about what does that mean.
Well, we're talking about energies in nature. When you talk about the gods and the goddesses, or vice versa, you're talking about energies in nature. Okay? And these energies, in other words, let's take, for instance, the other form of Hathor as being the goddess Nut. As the goddess Nut represented in pictorial form on the walls in ancient Kemet, or even today we can still see the goddess Nut giving birth to the sun. Now, this is part of the mythology. You know, sometimes people say, well, that's a myth. But you know what? Mythology sometimes explains things that we cannot really explain with words.
Right, right.
So we're talking about this energy that comes from outer space, if you will, the energy of the universe. So that the goddess Nut, her garment sometimes would be illustrated with stars on her body. Just the garment that she's wearing. And that's symbolic of the universe. At other times, she would be wearing a garment that would represent the Milky Way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So basically what I'm saying is that if you take the goddess Isis, which is another form of Hetheru or Hathor, the goddess Isis, when you look at her crown is really a throne on top of her head. Now, what does that mean? That means that she supports the pharaoh, and that crown is symbolic of the throne. Not only is it symbolic of the throne, but in reality, no pharaoh could become a pharaoh without marrying into the female line. And so we see a difference. We see a difference where our culture, patriarchal culture, we see the difference where the woman would take on the man's name.
Right.
And right. And it's totally reversed, so that when the Europeans came to Africa, came to Egypt specifically, they wanted to take away the idea of the goddess and just sort of relegate her to a back room someplace, which they've done successfully in our culture that we live in today. They've done that successfully. They've put the woman in a subservient position. And of course, if you really think about it, with the woman in ancient Egypt, it was her that actually spawned the great civilization that we call Egypt today, which is Kemet.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but her role in doing that, then, I guess, was really truly recognized and celebrated outwardly. This is what you're telling us.
Of course. We can look around today, in, even in West African countries, and you'll see that who runs the marketplace?
Right.
It's the women. It's the women. So they have the ability to be sensitive to things that me as a male would not be sensitive to. And I've said this quite a few times, and I'm not ashamed to say it, that women think much clearer than men in many instances. So you have a conflict of interest when you have our people who've been raised here in the West who believe that, well, the man is supposed to be the head of the house and so forth and so on. You know, that causes a lot of problems in relationships. It causes a lot of problems with the concept of who's dominant in our culture. So the young men, they grow up, and they don't really give the women the real respect that they're supposed to have, because they lack the knowledge.
Okay.
And it's I have to keep coming back to this, that if it wasn't for the feminine principles, like Ma'at, the goddess Ma'at, which is also another form of the goddess Hathor, the goddess Isis, the goddess Sektet, the goddess Sekhmet, and on and on and on and on. These are all part of the feminine principle as a whole. So the emphasis really is on, you know, I mean, and for a lot of people, this would probably, you know, would take them aback.
I'm sure.
Say, well, you know, well, wow. You know, I mean, you know, if it was the feminine principle that supported all these ideas that came out of ancient Kemet, architecture, art, music, and, you know, generally when you take a look at the pottery and things that were found in the necropolis, necropolis means, you know, the cemeteries, you will find vases, clay vases, the earliest going back 10,000-15,000 years ago. These were all done by women.
Hmm.
Women were the ones who were the real potters. So she has a very, very important role in the family. So if we keep in mind that no pharaoh becomes a pharaoh until he marries into the matriarchal line. That's very, very important. That is one of the things that they downplay in most of your history books. When you start to study ancient Egypt, you have no real sense of who the goddess is or who the god is. And one of the most beautiful temples that we visit on our trip is the Temple of Isis in Aswan.
Okay.
It's very beautiful. It's a very beautiful temple, and it's on an island, actually, in the basin of the Nile River, where the waterfall, it's not too far away from the first waterfall for the Nile River that travels all the way out to the Mediterranean. The other thing I wanted to point out is that when we pick up a book, or we look at a documentary dealing with ancient Egypt, we have a sense that everything is right there in Egypt. Now, Egypt is separate from Nubia.
All right.
Nubia, right. Nubia is the land of the blacks. In Egypt, that was our last hurrah. We went, we built the pyramids there. We built the Sphinx. And we built the Step Pyramid in Saqqara.
Mm-hmm.
This is all in close proximity to what we call Egypt. Now, if you really want to see the grand monuments, you have to go to Aswan, and that's part of our trip. What we do is we spend a day in Egypt to look at the pyramids, visit the pyramids, visit the Sphinx complex, visit the Egyptian Museum. We get a chance to go to Kana Khalili Bazaar, which is a huge marketplace. And from there, we bought a train.
Okay.
We bought a train. We bought a train that evening where you get your own private sleeper car. They serve you your dinner and your breakfast the next morning. When the sun rises the next morning, you're in Aswan. The train cannot go any further. That's the last stop because of the waterfall.
Hmm.
And so you're right there in Nubia. You're right there in the Black Land. And what is there? You have the Temple of Isis, one of the most beautiful temples in the Nile Valley. You have the great rock-hewn temple of Ramses II and his wife, Queen Nefertari, both carved into the cliffside. Huge, monumental. Then also we visit the broken obelisk, one of the obelisks that was commissioned by the pharaoh Queen Hatshepsut that was never taken out of the quarry because it cracked.
Okay.
And we visit perfumery where they make real perfume out of flowers, and they actually show you how to do it, how they do it, and they demonstrate. It's just a great time that first day while we're in Aswan. Now, we board a cruise boat in Aswan that's going to cruise back up the Nile. And on that cruise, that cruise will be like 4 days.
Wow.
And 3 nights, yes. And you will have your own suite on the boat. You eat your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner on board. And we'll be stopping at different temples. One of the first temples we'll stop at would be the Temple of Goombo. This is the temple of what they call the crocodile.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a double temple. Very, very interesting to go and visit this temple.
Mm-hmm.
And in this temple complex, you'll see different things like medical tools carved into the wall to show what type of tools that they used way back thousands of years ago. Things like scalpels and forceps. And
so they were actually doing surgery.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Trespanning, brain surgery, and the papyrus Evers will attest to that.
And this isn't a society that was inspired and dominated, you're saying, by women?
By women, exactly. Exactly. And we, as a people, if we could get back to that, you know, I mean, I give praises to the brothers who are out there and who know and who have this information.
I have a question for you, if you don't mind my coming
no,
in
no,
on
No, no,
you
can interrupt at any time.
Well, thank you. But, yeah, of course, it brings to mind, well, you know, how would this work? There's currently and in the past, I guess, more intensely, there were the, how shall I put it, with the women's movement, there's been controversy about that and so forth and what it means for women to be either recognized or is it a matter of women dominating? What does it mean that you're talking about when you say that it would be great if we could go back to that? What would we be going back to?
We will be going back to the recognition of that the woman is it's not a second class citizen. She's not to be subjected to by the male. But in fact, there should be an equal understanding between the two, to understand the role of each, and to understand. We all, it's like Sankofa. You have to look back to see what made a culture so great, and if you look at, and most mothers will agree that they're the ones really who take care of the household. They're the ones who are responsible for making sure that the baby gets whatever the baby needs, whether it be go to the hot the clinic or buying food. You know, they're the ones who are out there that's really doing that's keeping the house together, the matriarch of the household. So that when I was growing up, my father, he used to tell my mother, he says, "Well, I'm the man of the house, I'm this and I'm that, blah 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 blah." So that almost 40 years ago, when I got married, I carried on the same thing with my wife. I said, "Well, okay, I'm the man of the house. No, I think better than you do, and I think straighter, and so forth and so on." And we would have these little tiffs and arguments, and not speak to each other for about 10 days or 15 days. Which is totally out of the question now. I mean, if we have any kind of a disagreement, of course, you know, it would only last for about 2 seconds.
Okay.
But it's
and why
it's
is that?
Because it's the understanding that you cannot go with the paradigm of the patriarchal society that we live in, where women are just relegated to second class citizens. I hate to say it, but, you know, even in some of these organized religions where you go with to the house of prayer, whether it be the Islam, the women are always separated, or if it's Hebrew, the women are always separated from the men. And there's not that equality, I think, there. So all of this is a mindset. Now, once we get back to understanding the feminine role and what she's about. You have to remember that ancient Kemet was built on an agricultural base,
okay,
which meant that they saw that when you put the seed in the ground, the plant will come forward. That whole concept right there was you know, really a picture of the female.
Uh-huh.
To put the seed into her and then have it grow.
Okay.
And most of the mythologies in ancient Kemet is woven around that, so that the whole concept of birth and rebirth. It's very strong. That's a very strong mystery, to talk about how a woman gives birth to a baby, because that's, for many, a miracle within itself. Only she can do that. And if it wasn't for her, there would be no fowls. There would be no sons.
Okay.
So that was a very important concept in Kemetic mythology.
So really recognizing that, you know, where life comes from, you know, their understanding of how it is from the feminine that life comes forth. And so they were celebrating that. They took that and celebrated it on a cultural level.
Exactly. There was always a celebration of life.
Right.
You know, we can even go back to the Old Kingdom and recognize the fact that they had pharaoh queens, I mean women who were pharaohs.
Yeah.
See, most of the stuff that you get to read on ancient Egypt is not going to tell you anything like this.
Huh. Right.
We had the great pharaoh that was married to Nama, who was supposed to have founded the first dynasty, going back some 5,000 years ago. When he passed away, his wife took the throne. I can't think of her name right now, but we can look at the female pharaoh Nekratis from the sixth dynasty. She had actually built a stone bridge and created lakes out on the Tigris River so that people wouldn't have to use small boats to cross it. You know, she had this kind of power where she wielded it and not only changed the terrain of certain places, because, you know, that was all part of ancient Northeast Africa, the ancient Egyptian empire, which actually extended all the way up into Turkey. Places like Jordan and Syria and those places, that those were all under, at one time, Egyptian control.
And so
and
then,
we had...
Right, and so you had the control then being wielded by women, as you said. And if you don't mind, I'm going to come in here for a second. You were talking about, you know, what had happened in your own household growing up and what happened in the beginning of your marriage as well.
Yes.
I remember my father always saying, "I am the head of this house.
Right.
Go ask your mother."
right.
So there was,
and
that
was, and that was it was not right. It was not right. That is a European concept.
Mm-hmm.
That is a European concept.
Well, you know what? He was joking in a sense, but recognizing when he said, "I'm the head of this house," that was the joke part. What he really meant was, you know, ask your mom. He also would say things like, you know, "I'm the head and your mom is the neck." You know, we're coming from a Southern African context, and you were talking about the marketplace in Ghana. And that was something that resonated with me because it is much like some of the things that you will find in Nguni culture, Zulu and Xhosa culture and so forth, which is where I sort of originate.
Okay.
I'm very happy for the information that that you've been sharing with us. I see that we have a caller here, and I'm not sure if they're going to have a question for you or a tribute to a mom. But if you don't mind, I want you to take just a moment and talk about the African heritage tours you had mentioned a bit. You were talking about the places that people go. I want to make sure that people have an opportunity to find out more about the tours, and if they want to go, maybe this is a great gift for a mom. How can they reach you?
Okay. Well, we have a website anyone who's interested in going to Egypt in August, we'll be leaving August 18th. No shots are required.
That's
the only thing
you
need is a passport. I'm sorry?
I said that's good to know.
Yes. All you need basically is to have your passport up to date so that we will, as I said before, you will go to www.blackegypt.net. That's N-E-T.
Okay.
That's our website. On the website, you will find pictures of trips that we've taken in the past, monuments that we've visited, and it's just a host of information there. Now, I also want to say this, that the trip is very inexpensive compared to the things that you get on the trip. The trip is $2,079 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it covers your airfare from JFK to Cairo, Egypt. And like I pointed out before, we spend some time in Egypt, but then we spend the bulk of the time in Nubia because that's where the Valley of the Kings, Valley of the Queens, the great temple of Karnak, Luxor Temple, the temple of Amenhotep II, the temple of Ramses II at Luxor, the temple of the great female pharaoh, Hatshepsut, which is one of the most beautiful. It is, I think, a spectacular rock-hewn temple at a place called Del El Bari.
Okay, and people get to see all of those things. How long is the trip?
The trip is 10 days, and
so
we're going to see all of these things.
Right, right. Right.
And we're gonna see all of these things, and for that price, you know, it's not a bad price, because when I look at the price that some of the people, you know, who take trips every year to Kemet, they start at about $3,500 and then they go up.
Okay.
And I know this for a fact. I don't want to name any names or anything like that, but I know
like,
who they are.
Right. It sounds like you're able to give out a great deal for folks. Well, I'm hoping that folks will take down that information. I want to let listeners know that if you want more information about this, go ahead and go to that website and to learn more. Dr. Bennett,
right.
I so appreciate that you've come on. Unfortunately, we're running out of time for this particular segment.
But I would love to have you come back
on and do an entire show where you talk more about this wonderful information that you're giving to us. And I don't disagree with you a bit.
Okay. Thank
you
so much for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. I truly appreciate it. And please wish Mrs. Bennett a happy Mother's Day.
I sure will.
Hotep. Hotep. All right. That was Dr. George Bennett. And I so appreciate him coming on and giving us a little bit of information about some of the origins of celebrations of women and motherhood. And what came out of ancient Egypt. I am encouraging you to go and learn more about this history. It's a wonderful thing there for you to learn more about. I'm going to turn now to another guest that we've invited on the show. But before that, actually, I do have another caller here that I will go to before going to our next guest, who is Brandon Lacey Campos. He's a poet, and he's going to talk a bit about his tribute to his aunt, whom he wonderfully calls Honey Bun. But before that, let me quickly take this call. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Hello?
Which area code is this?
This is the 909 area code. I'm sorry, and thanks for reminding me.
Okay. 909 area code.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to call in to wish my daughter happy Mother's Day. She has two little girls that she's homeschooling, and she's a wonderful, wonderful mother. And I wanted to call and say happy Mother's Day to her and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers around the world today, including my wife.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and saying that. And it sounds as though part of her being able to be such a good mom is having a wonderful father who's very supportive.
Oh, yes. She herself has been a wonderful mother, and her daughter is a wonderful mother, too.
Right, right.
So I'm very, very thankful. I love my grandchildren to death.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and for sharing that lovely tribute. I'm sure she'll appreciate it. I hope she'll be able to listen to the show and hear it for herself.
Sure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for the show.
Please wish your wife and your daughter happy Mother's Day for me as well.
Sure, I will.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right. That's wonderful. We've got a caller in who wished his daughter happy Mother's Day, and it's important to remember that the people you wish happy Mother's Day are not necessarily your own biological mother, but it could be anybody whom you are close to who is a wonderful mother to her children. And mothers could be like aunts. I'm an aunt, and so I consider myself to be mothering in a sense to my own nieces. So moms come in many different forms. We want to celebrate any woman who has nurtured someone. And in that vein, we're going to turn to Brandon Lacey Campos, the poet who's going to talk about his aunt who fulfilled a similar role as that one. So here, Brandon, hi, how are you? You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm appreciative of you coming on, especially considering the circumstances. Tell us a bit about Honey Bun and what's going on at this time.
Well, actually, we just pulled over at a gas station outside of the Holland Tunnel. So we didn't get cut off. I'm coming back from my Honey Bun's funeral. So we laid her to rest yesterday. And so I really appreciate being able to come on and share a little bit about who she was, and she was a I knew from personal experience that she was a tremendous woman. She's my great aunt, but my grandmother died when my father was young, and so she raised my dad, and my dad was with her through the end. And she raised, and I found out through the funeral, she raised a lot of people. A lot of folks considered her.
So she was mom to a lot of people.
She had four biological children, but I met at least, and then she raised my dad, her nephew, and I met two other people that also consider her their mother, so much so that one of them was actually also there when she passed away last week. So she's a tremendous mother, and it was a great funeral. We were in southern West Virginia in a small town of 1,500 people, and there were 300 people at the funeral. So,
wow. She had quite an impact then.
She did. She's a much-loved woman. I've never been at a funeral where she was a woman of faith and did a lot of service at her church. And I've never been to a funeral where other churches, not even from her denomination, sent letters to be read at the funeral. So I was extremely touched by the tremendous number of people that she had touched with her life.
Right. And I want to take this moment to express my condolences to you as well. It was, when we were arranging this, I got the message from you. I think it was the day after we had spoken that your honey bun had passed away. And, it seems like it's just recent that it has happened. And, please accept my condolences for your loss.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. So I reached out to you because one of the things I wanted to have happen on the show is for people to share tributes in form of music and then also in form of poetry. And you're a poet, so tell me a little bit about your poetry, about your work, and what you do.
Sure. So I'm a poet, and most recently I'm a novelist. And so one of the ways that I've been able to honor Honey Bun, who I actually grew up calling Aunt Sis, but all my other siblings call her Honey Bun because she, I'm sure people are wondering, she started calling her first grandson Honey Bun, and he thought that that was her name, so it just stuck.
That's right. That's fantastic.
And so I found out 2 years ago that she was diagnosed with bone cancer, which is incurable and very slow, and so I sort of at that point, because such a tremendous force in my life, I decided that as a writer, there was a couple ways that I was going to keep her memory alive. And the first is I wrote a poem, which I'll read for you in just a moment. But also I have a novel coming out this summer, and it's the first in a trilogy. And one of my main characters is Honey Bun. So through my writing, I'm able to keep her alive. But I always write in my poetry and any type of writing I do, I really try to explore the intersections between, the very personal, and then try to place it in a broader context of the world. And so Honey Bun, both through her life and through her process of dying, helped me understand the world a little differently.
And what is the title of your book?
The title of the first book is Eden Lost.
Okay.
And that will be out from Rebel Sartori Press. Sometime this summer, the publication date says so on the website, if you go to the website, which is rebelsartoripress.com, then it says summer 2011. So I'm sure that will be updated soon with the exact publication date, which I was supposed to have my final revisions to the publisher by Friday, but then this happened. So he wonderfully said, take your time. So once I get back to the city and finish that, then the book will be out.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm hoping that folks got that information about the website, that they'll be able to go and listen to it. And I want to jump in for a moment here and take a moment to talk about a new blog that I have in relation to the radio show, whereby you'll be able to get more of this information if you hear a website being mentioned and you can't catch it right off the bat, so you don't have to try to rewind and listen to the show again. I'm putting together a blog where people will be able to go and get the information that is mentioned and read a little bit more about the guests who are on the show and about their expertise and the subject matter that we discuss. So that's something that we'll be putting together for you. So, Brandon, coming back to you and your work and so forth, tell us a bit more now about this poem that you have for Honeybun.
Sure. Well, it's just a little spoken word piece, and it's called, I think it's called Sweet Like Honey. I had a funny moment where my cell phone died, which I have an iPhone 4, which allows you to multitask, and now I'm using my partner's phone, which you can't, so I had to quick write it down, and I forgot to write down the title.
Okay.
So,
that's all right.
So I was like, oh, quick. So should I read it for you?
Please do.
Okay, so I'll call it Sweet Like Honey. That's the name today. Or Honey Bun.
Okay.
Sweet like honey, sweet like honey, she is. Those hills are powerful green shoulders hunched and laughing. Streams course along her telling stories about blackberry brandy brewed up out back alongside the white lightning home remedies, fried chicken and chitlins, collards green like those hills just out the back door. The stone wombs that sheltered her, that child of 1709, according to the bill of sale, African embryo artificially inseminated across the middle passage, implanted in those hills, born from a coal mine and mountain granite, gave birth to a blackbird. Singing sweet like fresh honey, we shall overcome. She built a bonfire to celebrate. Brown versus Board of Education said, don't know who burnt down that school. And I knew they wasn't sending my children back, she laughed. I'm old and crazy as hell. She'll not be with us much longer. Daughter of those hills has bone cancer. It doesn't matter because she's been to the mountaintop and she took us with her. Honey coating our tongue and spirits with sweet strength, this blackbird gonna sing a little bit longer. Stronger than those hills, spill stories like rivers of honey, sometimes bittersweet memories of slaves marched off to glory, hallelujah, sweet like honey. She is all we could dream to be. Blackbird, sweet like honey, sing us home. That's it.
Beautiful. Beautiful, Brandy. What a wonderful tribute to her. Did you have an opportunity to share it with her before she passed?
I did. She, I wrote that a couple years ago, and I got to spend the last two Thanksgivings we got together with her, and she and I had a really great relationship, and so I did share that with her and shared it with the rest of the family. And they all, I'm hoping some of them are listening because they knew that I was going to be on the show tonight. But they, she was great. She was an old Southern black woman from the mountains who loved the heck out of her children and grandchildren and everyone in the family. So,
well, it sounds like you were really blessed to be loved by her.
I was, absolutely. So,
well, yeah. I thank you so much for sharing this tribute. I don't know whether you have other folks that you would like to say Happy Mother's Day to, since you have the opportunity.
Sure. Well, I will send a shout-out to my own mom, Happy Mother's Day, Mom, and my stepmom, Melanie, Happy Mother's Day, Mel, and all the other wonderful women that have mothered me in all so many different ways over the years. I have been the tremendous recipient of a lot of motherly love, so I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're
and thank
very
you for
good.
Letting me be on the show.
Well, I appreciate your being here. You have certainly enriched the experience of my experience, and I think the experience of everybody who's listening, with that wonderful poem and the story of an amazing woman who has passed out of this world, but leaves behind quite a legacy.
She does. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And have a safe rest of your trip home.
Thank you. We're almost there.
All right, then.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Brandon Lacey Campos, the poet and novelist, talking about his aunt Honeybun, and who has just passed away, and talking about how so much of her town, or quite a large portion of her small town, came out to memorialize her, and that the tributes to her came from many different areas and many different church denominations. Apparently, she was very active in her own church, and not only that, but her influence and the wonderful things that she did spread out to other churches in the community as well. And so they all sent tributes to her as well. It says such marvelous things about her that so many people came to memorialize her. And I'm sure Brandon is missing her very much, but it sounds as though what she contributed to his life is precious, and he will be able to carry that on going forward. If you do want to get more information about Brandon's work, you can visit the website that was mentioned earlier or come to the Untangled Resolutions, The Problem is the Answer radio show's blog. I know that sounded kind of clunky, but finding it is not as clunky. You will put into the URL untangledresolutions.blogger.com. It's a blogger website, and we're going to be putting more information about that on the website for the Blog Talk Radio part of this show. So look out for more information about that. That will allow you to be able to go somewhere and sit at your own leisure and read the information that is presented on the show, get the links to the websites and links to the resources. Well, we're going to end a little bit early today so that you can get back to celebrating your own mom. I know that I want to take some time and share more memories with my own mother and with my sister as well, who's also a mom. So I'm going to leave you with another performance from Anita Renfro. And this is a brand new release from her that she did specifically for this Mother's Day. And it's called In the Motherhood. This is Anita Renfro. And I'll be back in just a moment. Comedy, you can Google her, Anita Renfro, and see her on YouTube as well. And highly encourage it, especially for you moms out there when you've had a hard day and you need a little bit of something to pick you up. She is a wonderful, wonderful resource for you. And if you want to know more about her and her website and so forth, come over to the blog at untangledresolution.blogspot.com, and you can find out more information about her. Well, I've enjoyed being with you this afternoon. I hope that you're enjoying this wonderful Mother's Day and that you can now return to celebrating your mom, or if you haven't done so already, give her a call, or whoever it is who has nurtured you in your life. It could be an aunt or a teacher or a grandparent or a friend or neighbor, somebody who acted in a motherly fashion to you. Give her a call and say hello and say thank you. This is the day to do it. And do it every day. It doesn't have to be just Mother's Day. This is a wonderful opportunity to especially remember mothers, but thank your mother every day. All right, with that, I will leave you. Have a wonderful week, and I hope to see you again next week. Bye-bye.